Back in the 90s, I was in a very famous TV show, oh, oh, oh. I'm BoJack the Horse, BoJack, BoJack the Horse, don't act like you don't know. Folks, this is a brand new podcast here from Infinity Break. I'm, of course, the voice of Ben Hamlin, and I am also myself, Ben Hamlin. I am joined by someone you will have never heard from an Infinity Break project before. Please, welcome to the studio, Leslie.
Thank you so much. I feel so honored to be here with you.
Sure. Me too. Leslie, what are we talking about on this brand new Infinity Break podcast, the subject of which I have not explicitly stated, but it will be clear if you care about it.
We are talking about BoJack Horseman.
God, I appreciate your forward declarative sentences, unlike what I just came up with, which was near and utter nonsense. Yes, we were talking about BoJack Horseman. This is a brand new BoJack cast. A BoCast, if you... No, we won't.
Are you sure?
I don't think so. This is a brand new podcast that is going to be a celebration and analysis of the Netflix original animated comedy series, BoJack Horseman. I'm, of course, Ben Hamlin of Infinity Break fame, which isn't much fame. I am the Dungeon Master of Cursed Seas. I am the host of Super Cinema, our other media analysis podcast, of which actually we have a couple. And I love BoJack Horseman. And so I am joined by my friend and yours, Leslie, to talk about BoJack Horseman. And Leslie, why are we talking about BoJack Horseman? What is it about this show in particular?
How do you even begin to quantify that, really? I feel like that's such a loaded question, because you go into it thinking that you're going to watch a cartoon, like a Netflix original cartoon. And then as you begin to watch it, you're like, oh, this is a story about a guy who's kind of shitty. And then as you continue watching it, you realize that it's actually about all manner of subjects, including mental illness and existentialism and fame and all of that stuff. So what draws us to BoJack Horseman? I think probably making something so relatable and so absurd at the same time.
Yeah, it is a show that is so weirdly foreign, because it exists in a world that is quite literally not ours, because we don't have anthropomorphized animal people around yet, it talks about situations that I'm going to take a shot in the dark and say that neither you nor I are in. Neither of us are multimillionaire 90s comedy stars.
It's true.
As much as I have been trying, I have yet to defeat Jerry Seinfeld. All of this is hypothetically foreign concepts to us, but it is so intensely relatable and so gosh darned funny that we couldn't help but start a new podcast in which we are going through BoJack Horseman episode by episode with analysis and profound appreciation for this weird, weird show. So that's the show concept. We're obviously not just going to be talking about BoJack Horseman. As my esteemed co-host Leslie just hinted at, we are going to be talking about, you know, fame and new media and... mental illness and trauma and comedy and Netflix and streaming in Hollywood and all sorts of, and a lot of dog jokes, actually.
So many dog jokes. So many.
So Leslie, let's, we're obviously going to talk about another weird hypothetical world in a moment, but let's talk about a weird hypothetical world in which someone has never seen nor heard of BoJack Horseman.
Okay. Well, How
would you describe to this person who just opened up like a portal gun into our world? What do you tell them about BoJack Horseman?
That is such an interesting question. I have to think about this. I wasn't expecting such a deep question so soon in the series.
I kind of meant more just describe it.
Just describe the show. It's a cartoon from Netflix, and it has amazing, incredible voice talents like Paul F. Tompkins and Will Arnett and
Amy Sedaris and Alison Brie and Aaron Paul and Patton Oswalt.
Oh, I'll tell you what, Aaron Paul is such a gem on this show, because that was just such an unexpected turn from him after watching him in Breaking Bad. I honestly think that, and I don't know if it's just my appreciation for the character of Todd, but I think that his might be one of them.
We are all love Todd.
We are all love Todd. But I just really, really love the job that Aaron Paul does on that show, on BoJack Horseman.
You and me both. He is absolutely incredible. As the theme song of the show hints, back in the 90s, BoJack Horseman was a very famous TV show. He was a TV show star. Compare him... Well, probably the most adept comparison is not appropriate anymore.
Which would...
Cosby.
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, well, but I mean... But I kind of feel like it's a lot more of a Full House vibe than a Cosby Show vibe.
Yeah.
So you could just as easily say, you know, you could just as easily say that he was like that, that the horse was meant to be more like Danny Tanner than...
Oh, sure. There will obviously be a lot of media references in the show and lots of talk about nostalgia, which is quite literally BoJack's drug.
Oh, God, really it is. Oh, man. Could not have been made clearer than in the pilot, I think. Like, it was just so in your face.
Oh, yeah, when he, I mean, quite literally just gets drunk and watches his old sitcom again.
Yeah.
Yeah, he may do cocaine, but nostalgia is the real drug. It's a metaphor. I think I'll do that. I think I'll just lean up on the mic every time I have to talk about a metaphor. Anyway, he was a very famous 90s sitcom personality. You know, think more of a family sitcom like, you know, as mentioned, like Full House or Home Improvement or something along those lines.
Anything on TGIF, really.
Yeah, pretty much. It is now implied some 20 years later, and BoJack is not doing well mentally or physically or emotionally or spiritually or anything. He is a kind of a washed-up hack who hasn't had work in a number of years, deeply regrets that he has invited a house guest named Todd Chavez into his house, has an extremely strained relationship with his ex-girlfriend /agent, who is, for some reason, still working with him, and has a absolute contemptuous relationship with fellow 90s sitcom star Mr. Peanut Butter, as voiced oh so beautifully by the luxurious tones of Paul F. Tompkins.
I see. He's so good.
In an attempt to get back on his feet again, all four of them, he has gotten in touch with a publisher who is trying to get him in touch with a new ghostwriter for a kind of tell-all autobiography. Allison Brie's Diane Nguyen, who is a young ghostwriter who is just dipping her toes into this Hollywood world. And finally, Patton Oswalt plays a lot of characters. That's the plot.
Yeah, there you go. I think that you did a great job there.
Thank you. That's like the premise of the whole show and itself, obviously the premise of the pilot. But before we kind of dig deeper into the pilot, Leslie, I was hoping that you and I could talk about like how we came into the show the first time.
Oh, sure. Well, because we came from two completely different places. I know you told me that you've been a fan since the beginning, right?
Yeah, I have been around since the beginning. I'm not sure what drew me into it. And like, ostensibly, there's nothing that would make me like this from purely a surface level. I think it might have to do with the fact that like, back in the day, back in the 90s, back in the day, like before Netflix was dropping a new show every other week,
right,
there wasn't a ton of original programming 1, 2, 3, 4 years ago in like, I don't know, I guess this maybe would have been 2013 or so when it came out.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays it's hard to tell where to start with Netflix, but like in 2013, it was easier.
When I came into the show, all four seasons had already aired. They were all already on Netflix. I only got into the show in September, like the end of September 2017.
And now you're doing an analysis podcast on it.
Oh, I love it so much. It just drew me in immediately. And I'll tell you, the reason why I waited so long to watch it is because I didn't actually really know anybody else who had seen it. And so it wasn't really ever in my sphere of interest. And in addition to that, I actually suspected that I was probably going to hate it.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to absolutely hate it. And I watched it, honestly, out of sheer boredom one day, because I wanted to see what it was about. But I am very dubious of animated shows, particularly Netflix originals that are animated. And so I started watching it thinking, I thought I was going to hate it. I thought I was going to absolutely hate it. And then I just blew through it and I fell in love with it, much to my surprise and delight.
He's just a sad, sad horse.
He's such a sad horse.
Yeah, no, same. I also didn't think I was going to like it because, I mean, season one, this is just a budget thing, but like the animation's a little choppier. You know, you can see the joints a little more, but you know, that doesn't so much matter as the fact that like, yeah, I saw this and I thought like, oh, well, I already hate Family Guy and South Park, so I can't imagine I'll like this.
That's how I felt too. Yeah, I do really enjoy Bob's Burgers, but I felt like that's really an exception to my general rule of I don't care for adult cartoons that much.
Yeah, same. Bob's is like it. I guess I like Archer, but like Archer also kind of tries more than either of the other two shows I mentioned. But no, I mean, like, it is a animation geared toward adults that deals with adult subjects, and like sometimes those are extremely good, and sometimes those are very, 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 very bad, and become the terrible background radiation filler of our media culture. I have strong feelings about, anywho.
And that's why BoJack Horseman is such a delight.
Yeah, and by the way, and in total fairness, and we'll talk about this a little later in this episode, first couple episodes don't give you a ton of indication that it's going to be anything other than that. You have to buckle down for a while.
You really do.
There have been friends really, that I've tried to get into the show that I've been like, no, I know how it seems right now. It does get deeper.
That's exactly what I just had a dinner party with a couple of friends of mine a couple of weeks back.
Oh, glamorous.
And I was telling them, and I was telling them about how much they needed to watch the show. And they were like, I've watched the first couple of episodes. And I was like, no, you have to go at least to episode 6 before you make any decision as to whether or not you like this show, because no one likes it for the first few episodes. I don't think.
No, I mean, it's funny, but it doesn't give you the clear plot indication that it's going to be anything more than just an empty sitcom at the start.
I agree.
And then when it does, oh boy, does it ever.
My goodness.
Leslie, this is obviously an analysis podcast focusing on the show. But this is actually a subject we have not covered in any of our pre-production conversations, and I actually want to make this part of the podcast itself. Are we assuming that the listener has already seen the show?
I think that we should assume that the listener has already seen the show.
Okay.
Because otherwise, why would you listen to an analysis podcast on a show that you have not watched?
Well, I don't know. Every bad movie podcast I listen to, I never, like, watch the movies. But this also isn't a bad movie podcast.
No.
This is an analysis show. Like, you're going to want to have watched this if you want it, our analysis. Yeah. No promise that analysis is going to be good or interesting, by the way. Thank you for subscribing. Leave a review.
Sure. We don't make any claims that this is going to be cerebral or what, or anything like that.
We're just two sad teens talking about a horse.
Talking about a horse. A sad horse.
Neither of us are teenagers, obviously. Details.
The magic of radio.
magic of radio. Suddenly I'm an old man. I actually had to do that voice extensively during Kersey's recording earlier today.
That's a good one.
Yeah, professional voice actor Ben Hamlin. Audience, let's pretend. That's also part of the magic of radio, is that I have a fulfilling media career. yes. Okay, let's assume they have already seen this, so we don't need to tiptoe around spoilers or anything. Because if I try to keep track of spoilers, I'm going to lose my head.
I don't feel like we would be able to do a successful analysis of a show without spoiling it.
Yeah, because you got to talk about foreshadowing and all that nonsense.
Exactly.
All that writerly nonsense, like foreshadowing and subtext.
All that fancy schmancy stuff. All that Hollywood stuff.
What's that quote? I know authors who use subtext and they're all cowards. I don't remember. Wow. I don't remember where that's from. I just love that line.
I have a lot of feelings about that. They're for a different podcast than this one.
okay, so we've talked about how kind of hard it is to get into the show from the very start. Let's just talk about the show itself. Let's talk about the pilot.
Let's do it. BoJack Horseman, the BoJack Horseman story, chapter 1.
So I kind of already provided the plot synopsis earlier, but I guess one more time, BoJack Horseman is a sad horse who was popular 20 years ago. He is dealing with crippling depression and lots of addiction. He has a house guest he doesn't like, a former girlfriend, now agent, that he doesn't like, a fellow sitcom star he doesn't like, a ghostwriter that he kind of likes in the wrong way.
I'm so excited to get into this episode because, as we have already said, you know, it's not that good.
Yeah.
It's just not, it's, I mean, it is a sitcom, sort of, but without knowing what's to come, a lot of it doesn't really land on the first episode, you know? And I think, like, going back and watching it again for the purposes of taking notes for this podcast, I caught so many things that make it, in my opinion, and I think that our opinions are very different on this, in my opinion, it made it so much more watchable, knowing what is to come.
Oh, absolutely. In the seasons, absolutely.
In seasons going forward. I feel like it is, like, it's incredibly self-referential, but you don't know that yet because it's only the first episode and you don't know what's coming. And so you don't understand what those references are.
I did find it interesting how much is already there at the start. That we already have shots of all three of the kids, that Kristen Schaal is already playing one of them. Oh my God, I'm spacing.
Sarah Lynn.
Oh yes, yes, of course. You know, that we already have, you know, we have the bad book deal, that we have the Mr. Peanut Butter and Diane are already dating, which is quite literally their status quo for the next four seasons.
Yep.
There isn't any time they're not dating.
That's true.
I mean, they're on and off at a little bit at one point, but that's not quite the same thing.
Right. But we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Spoilers again, I guess. You know, everything's there already. Even Lenny Turtletop is in the background.
Yeah.
Like, the framework is already there. I just don't think the pilot is very good.
Right, right. Well, not only have they set this background for us and have they set this universe up for us to understand, but during the very beginning, when BoJack is talking to Charlie Rose...
Yikes.
He talks about, big yikes there. When he's talking to that guy.
Generic NPR host.
Yeah, when he's talking to generic NPR host, he is talking about Horsin' Around, which is, of course, the title of the television show that he was the star of in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
And he's defending Horsin' Around as a piece of entertainment. And he basically, you know, he launches into this big speech about how real life kicks you in the urethra, and sometimes when you get kicked in the urethra, you just want to watch a happy show where everything gets wrapped up at the end of 30 minutes. And he also makes a reference to Ibsen and says, you know, well, Horsin' Around's it's no Ibsen, which, you know, Ibsen was a playwright who's known as the father of realism.
Mm-hmm.
So in that scene, that is basically giving you an outline of what BoJack Horseman, the show, is going to be.
I caught that this time around as well, that, like, yeah, he says it's not going to be as saccharine and meaningless as you think it is or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cleverly seated, and that is a very writerly...
It really was.
That's a very writerly move to make, is to put, yeah, make your prologue... Anyway, yeah, like yeah, twist it in like that. That is a actually extremely clever move from a writer standpoint.
And that's what I'm saying, is that the first time you watch the pilot, because you don't understand what's coming, you're just watching this anthropomorphic horse talking to a generic NPR host.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't understand how meta and deep what he's saying actually is until you go back and watch it again, which I think is very brave of the writers to do, but the first time it just doesn't. It doesn't really resonate, you know, well, for obvious reasons.
Well, we've been talking about, like, the assumption that we both had when watching this for the first time, that, like, this wasn't going to be good, that this was going to be, you know, empty sitcom material in the form of maybe a slightly better done American Dad or Family Guy or whatever else.
Sure.
And that we weren't expecting a lot out of it. That line absolutely plays to that effect of us just not knowing what we are getting into, and that this is actually going to be a lot deeper than the surface level adult cartoon that we're getting at the very beginning.
Right.
Comma, but it is also about the entire show. Like, even knowing full well that you are going to get an extremely deep and inviting program, every single season I have rewatched multiple times and still found more layers to it. Because this is an incredibly complex cartoon about an incredibly depressed horse.
It really, really is. And it's so genre-defying as well, because I can't really pin down... The only thing that I can say that it is absolutely for certain is animated.
Yes.
And that is as far as I can go, because the rest of it just really, really transcends genres, in my opinion.
Oh, if this were filmed live action and the main characters weren't a Clydesdale and a Golden Retriever, this would be on HBO.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
This would be like a Showtime series or something that Aaron Sorkin wrote or something.
No arguments for me whatsoever. I find it so interesting.
If the main characters weren't a Clydesdale and a Golden Retriever.
Sure, sure. I think that what I find the most interesting is that I went into it thinking I was not going to like it at all. And I came out of it thinking this is one of the best shows on television, period, that I have ever seen.
Oh, this thing has spoiled me for normal comedy.
Absolutely.
I'm sincere here. Like the bar in the last like 3 or 4 years of comedy has gotten so incredibly high that like other shows are just not cutting it for me.
Understandable. And it's so funny because the problem. Oh yeah, for sure. But when you watch the first episode, like you don't get a sense of that at all. You do not get a sense of that whatsoever. There's no indication that this is going to blow your mind out of your ass with how great it is. Because it's not that great. The first episode's not that great.
No, it's a little, and I promise we'll get the plot, folks. But it's a little choppy. The jokes don't land as nicely. The fact that the first episode ends with like an extended vomiting scene.
Yeah, so I want to talk about that.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
Because I took some notes on that. So first of all, I just want to say, let's really dive into why we think it's bad. Specifically, yes. Instead of just saying it gets good, but it's this one's first one's bad. Like, let's discuss why it's bad.
Oh, okay. Should we just go through the plot real quick?
Yeah. Like
the actual beat by beat of the episode.
Let's do it.
BoJack Horseman shows up drunk and late to a NPR interview. I keep saying NPR. It is PBS.
Oh, you're right. Generic PBS.
But like everybody on PBS also has an NPR show. Like that's just how it works. That's just how it's all broadcasted.
Yeah.
He shows up late to a PBS interview, drunk as hell, waxing philosophical about his show. It cuts like 24 hours later to BoJack Horseman showing up at his own house, waking up in the morning to find his roommate / house guest, Todd Chavez, who keeps insisting to him that they need to throw a party. And he seems very overeager about this.
Can I just say, I'm so sorry to interrupt your synopsis, but very, very quickly... Very quickly, I just want to say that that is the most entertaining part of the entire pilot, of the entire first episode, is that B-plot of Todd and the party and why he needs to throw it.
Especially since, no, I completely agree. Especially since that's also a great part about the show is that Todd is having his own separate adventures.
Yeah.
That are like completely more ridiculous than anything that is happening to BoJack. And agreed. That he is not the focus of the show for some reason.
Agreed.
Look no further than Todd's Disneyland.
Oh, we love Todd so much.
He's wonderful. Not the best character on the show, I may joke.
So.
Yes. BoJack then goes into a flashback about a extendedly horrible night in which his girlfriend and also agent, Princess Carolyn, has recently broken up with him. During said breakup, we are introduced to Mr. Peanut Butter, a fellow sitcom star from the 90s, who seems to be doing a lot better than BoJack, and is, as we'll find out next episode, about to be starting a reality television show that has never aired and doesn't last.
Yeah, that we don't hear anything else about that, I don't think.
No, I think that's a one-episode joke.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Oh, after that, of course, BoJack is called into a meeting with his book publisher, as voiced incredibly by Patton Oswalt, who is a penguin that has some financial troubles as their publishing house is not doing well. In fact, they are relying almost entirely on BoJack's book to bring them out of debt. Even though he promises his publisher that he will have a good chunk of the book done within a week, he does not do that and instead procrastinates his time watching old reruns of Horsing Around on his TV, much to Todd's disappointment. When he finally realizes how much is due, he has a panic attack, has to go to a hospital, and is told to take it easy for a while. It is during this that he calls Diane Nguyen, a ghostwriter who might be able to help him with his book. He agrees to throwing a party for Todd, who is in fact throwing a party as a quinceañera for a.
It's implied that he's like a drug lord or something.
Yeah, some sort of mafiosos.
A career criminal, like a career criminal.
Some sort of crime lord's daughter. Therefore, BoJack just has a lot of criminals over at his place for this wonderful quinceañera
and teenage girls.
At this party, he meets Diane Nguyen, who has an extremely awkward conversation with him. And once he realizes that she could actually probably help him out with this book, he develops a bit of a crush, only to realize that Mr. Peanut Butter, his hated rival, is in fact her boyfriend. The show that ends with an extended vomiting joke.
An extended cotton candy vomiting joke at that.
Yeah, not even pretty vomit. Just, wait, what? I'm sorry. Let's
move
on.
What is your idea? What is that? Yeah, we're going to unpack that later.
No, we're super not. This is not a Griffin McElroy production. We don't have to talk about Vore.
Oh, thank God. Oh, gracious.
Folks, I think that's the first time that word's been used on an IB project. Will be the last, promise. Anyway, that's the entire plot. Let's talk about why it's not that great.
Let's talk about why it's bad. So, I want to start by saying that I think that the reason why it doesn't land is because the writers already know where they're... I think that they definitely already know where they're going to go with this show.
Oh, easily.
And
I
think that it's sort of like when a programmer or developer creates a first iteration of a site with a vision in mind, but that first version isn't going to land with end users just because the vision's not there yet. And I think that they told a lot of jokes and they had BoJack say an awful lot of things about, you know, being very drunk and just really dialing it up to 11 to give us an idea of what we were in for. But it just didn't work because of the fact that we don't know these characters yet.
No, we really don't.
And so it felt like it was trying too hard the first time. And so then when you watch it through subsequent times, because now you know who the characters are, it makes sense. But you have to kind of be eased into this world a little bit more than the pilot eases you.
Yeah, it is. I mean, quite truly, and this is how it goes, like, as many drafts of this, you know, teleplay as there could possibly be, every pilot is a rough draft. No matter how long they've been working on it and how many versions it's gone through, it is still a rough draft. I tried to write an extended radio TV series, so to speak, or radio series, for the last, like, 3 years of my life. That pilot went through 10 different versions. Still a rough draft.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it goes. Like, it is not a rough draft because the writer hasn't spent time on it. It's just because, like, those actors are still getting used to each other. You know, people are still settling into characters. They don't quite know how to edit the show yet. They don't quite know how to present the show yet. These are all things that come with time and come with part of the television development cycle. Usually, and the Netflix model is obviously completely different. A pilot could be made, you know, a calendar year before the rest of the episodes are made. Mm-hmm. It just takes time for those elements to all coalesce together, and it takes time for, you know, studio producers to be like, yeah, all right, we will pursue this project. It's different with Netflix. Netflix just seems to order entire seasons out of whole cloth.
Yeah.
But that's a different deal.
Sure.
But with any show, it just takes time to warm up. That's just how it goes. And like already, even by like the second and third episode, like things start to fall into place. And I think the humor becomes a lot more, and we'll talk about this in the literal next episode, folks. The humor starts to fall into place a little more, and we start to get more what I would consider classic BoJack gags.
I agree.
Like, season two contains the very first, use of, like, obviously things like Princess Carolyn's ringtone, which is a staple throughout all of season one. Recurring gag of alliterative sentences. Steal right. A meal from Neil McBeal, the Navy SEAL? like, none of that stuff's in the pilot.
Right. You're absolutely right.
And that's fine. That's fine. It's just not the show it's going to be yet.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the only thing that exists in the pilot that then continues on, the one thing that they really, really got right are the visual gags. I think that they got those. I think that they got those right from the very beginning, and I think those are the most enjoyable part of the pilot, and I think that that's why Todd's B plot is so interesting.
Yes.
Is because the visual gags, you know, like with the anthropomorphic animal renames of stuff like Lululemon and how BoJack is in St. Elmer's hospital, which, oh man, that's...
Oh, speaking of which, my favorite joke is actually from that scene. It's when he's told, like, what happened to him, that he had the panic attack or whatever, and then someone says something that sets him off, and you just hear him gasping for air, and then it cuts 10 minutes later, and it says, well, since you had another panic attack, we...
Yes, that was really great, yeah.
And it just resumes on from there, and it's treated like nothing, and that's one of the funnier things this show does.
I agree.
But even that joke, I will argue, is an improvement over the previous time they did the 10 minutes joke earlier that episode, with Todd and BoJack, where BoJack asks, what, do people not like me? And Todd does, And then it cuts 10 minutes later. And that feels very sloppy, and that joke, I think, could have been, like, 4 seconds shorter.
It feels very forced. It feels very ham-fisted, in my opinion.
Yes, it certainly does. But like, that's what I mean, that, like, hey, even later that episode, they get better at telling that exact joke format again.
That's true. That's very true. So I do actually want to address the vomit in the room. Because I was watching the scene at the end where BoJack discovers that Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter are dating.
You're attracted to that.
And then he becomes violently ill. I found that upon rewatching so much funnier than I thought it was when I first watched it, and I'll tell you why. It's the exact same reason why BoJack's interview is so meta and interesting. If you think about it, in the pilot, the very first instance that you see, the very first explanation that you're given that in this world, we don't just have anthropomorphic animals. We don't just have animals who date each other.
Okay.
This is a human dating a dog. And the show is asking you to accept that. And so I feel like it was just very meta for BoJack to go into such detail, like, hold on, wait, you're with that. That penis has been in that vagina. It said, because, like, that's what any viewer would think.
But
was
in
like,
a
wait,
sexual
it's
way.
Right, exactly. And instead of just asking you to just go with it, I feel like the writers included that to kind of give us time to process that this is that kind of show. This is
sure,
a show
sure.
in which this kind of stuff happens. And so
BoJack's reaction is our reaction.
Exactly. Exactly. We're all BoJack in that scene. And so I appreciated it so much
more. We are all BoJack.
We're all BoJack in that scene. And I feel like I appreciated it so much more upon rewatch and realizing that that's what they were doing than I did during the pilot, which makes me really sit and pause and wonder and think, like, I did just accept it. Like as soon as they were like, yeah, we're dating, I was like, oh, I guess that's a thing. All right. This is that kind of universe. And it didn't even occur to me. Okay, you know what? You know what? This is not that kind of podcast.
No, keep talking.
Blah.
Follow us on Twitter. That's at... keep talking, please.
But all I was saying is that it just... I just find it so interesting that that's how they chose to let us into that world. That was very smart. That was very smart, in my opinion.
Yeah, sure. No, I completely understand that. And I now that you've explained your stance on that, I actually do think it works a lot better. You are right. However, I do appreciate the, and I think that's one of the funnier jokes is the, but like in a sexual way, right? Buddy, yeah. No, I do appreciate that. The fact that he then just, like, hurls off the side of the thing for, like, straight up 15 seconds is a little too much. It's to the point where every time if I ever show it to other people and be like, all right, come on, let's cut away from this. Let's just cut to credits.
I feel like they went a little Family Guy with the length of time that allow that gag to go on. It was a bit overdone.
Yeah, well, it's a classic comedy thing of, like, overplaying the gag or extending the gag way longer than it's supposed to go, and therefore by making it awkward, you make it funny again. That is a comedy trope.
Oh no, I know that it is. I'm just debating how effective it was in this particular execution.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Not very.
Oh sure.
I think it's actually it's Kristen Schaal, who is on this show, obviously, who did a bit for a long time called, like, Kristen Schaal as a Horse. In which she just, like it was part of one of her performances or something, but she just, like, danced around in a circle and did the exact same thing every single time. And, like, by, I don't know, I'll see if I can find it. I'll put it in the show notes. I know she did an interview about it on Wits at one point. But, like, it was a repetition joke. And that every time she did it, you know, it was, like, it was funny the first time. It was maybe funny the second time. Okay, this is getting bad the third time. But then, as she kept periodically going back to it, it just got funnier and funnier and funnier.
Sure.
Like, it's playing the joke too long.
Sure.
That being said, I think it would have been funnier if he, like, had just started to hurl and it cut to credits.
That's true. Although I do think that him reiterating starting now, right after he finished, was that that was quite funny.
Yeah, that's funny too. You're right. There's no perfect way to write that ending. Oh, and even so, don't they then go back up to the roof to talk for a little longer?
Yeah, they do. What?
Oh, okay, well, so that can't even be the end of the episode.
No, they don't. That's in episode two. Oh, you're thinking of the end of episode two. This is the end of episode one. That is
absolutely... We did just watch these back to back.
Yeah, we did. We watched them back to back, so there might be a little confusion. But no, at the end of episode one is literally, it's just a shot of BoJack's house with the candy
mountain.
Mountain at the base of his stilts for his house.
So, yes. That you're correct. That's how it ends, and it ends by the camera pulling out. Mm-hmm. Pulling back. Although, in fairness, the smash cut to the credits is a extended BoJack gag that is going to be used like another dozen times throughout the entire show. So, again, the bones of it are there. It's just like these gags that we come to associate with the show just haven't been filled in yet.
Yeah, but at the same time, a lot of things do get established and you don't even notice them until subsequent watchings, but they're there from the very beginning. Like I said, the wordplay is there, and then you know the intro already is starting to take shape with the people who are involved in BoJack's life being in the intro, which is a whole subject on its own. The ever-changing intro.
Yes, of course. This is something that Leslie has noticed, and I have not for some reason.
Wait, you didn't?
Yeah, we talked about this. I never noticed the fact that the introduction changed.
Oh, that's right. We did talk about this. Which, man, you have... Well, as we go, you are in for a treat, my friend.
Oh, now that I'm watching this with a critical academic eye, folks, I went to school for this. That's actually not a joke. My bachelor's is in new media studies.
Whoa, fancy school.
Yeah, it just means I know how iPhones work. From a usability standpoint, not from... Don't know how the electronics work. I'm not that smart. Anywho. I just straight up never noticed. Because I'm too busy trying to sing along with the theme and match the weird tone of that trombone.
Saxophone. You're in for such a treat. You're in for such a treat.
No, I'm sure I am.
I can't wait. But so that obviously gets established right away. And then there are a few things that are put in that end up recurring throughout the show, like the lady with the baby, and the baby keeps getting older and becomes a toddler and stuff, just like this background character. Remember when Princess Carolyn and BoJack are breaking up and Princess Carolyn infers that he doesn't want to have children because he freaked out when she was like, oh, look at that cute baby. And like that lady in that dress and that child are throughout the show. And the child becomes, obviously, I think the last time we see the child is in season four, and it's a toddler now, like instead of an infant. Yeah. There are just so many really, really fascinating continuity seeds that are planted right in the pilot.
That is another thing, is there's like a lot of reoccurring extras. And I don't even mean like speaking extras. I just mean like background people.
Right. Because this lady doesn't talk ever.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about this in episode two, but like the Blue Jay paparazzi guy is featured in the episode, but he's on like a computer monitor in the background. It's great.
Oh, yeah. See, that's what I love so much about the show is like I've noticed stuff that you haven't noticed. You have noticed stuff I have not noticed. You went to fancy school learning. I didn't finish college. It's great.
That's okay. I barely did.
It's fantastic.
Future employers, that was a joke. I did. But, did you notice PFT's cameo in the background?
No.
When Mr. Peanut Butter first shows up, to the left of him behind the restaurant is actually drawn Paul F. Tompkins.
Shut up! You're kidding me.
Yeah.
Oh, you're kidding me.
And that background extra shows up a lot. In a lot of scenes with Mr. Peanut Butter.
How have I missed this? Well, see? You missed the intro. I missed animated Paul F. Tompkins.
It's a well-dressed man with a brown mustache and PFT's haircut.
My goodness. Wow.
Who That's usually great. Appears in scenes with Mr. Peanut Butter.
That's fantastic. See, so the pilot's not all bad. It just hasn't found its legs yet.
No. It's not awful. It's just choppy and it's a little awkward. And when I, as I've said before already, like when I try to show it to friends, it's always, okay, bear with me on this.
Yeah.
It just,
but once you
it,
do.
it becomes a different show. No, it not really, a different really show. Does. It just becomes a better show.
There's more nuance to it.
I think that concludes all of my thoughts on the pilot. Certainly, we've been talking for a while. Do you have any more you want to add before we move on? And by move on, I mean end the episode.
Sure. I don't have anything else to contribute. I feel as though I have said all that needs to be said about the pilot. There's no reason to keep living with it. We can move forward. We can push on through until we get to the really, really good stuff.
All right, then we are going to end this episode. And actually, in fact, Leslie and I will be both coming right back to talk about record episode 2, which will be coming out in 2 weeks' time. Oh, no. It'll be coming in 1 week's time because I just remembered our production schedule. This has been, and I don't think we've mentioned this before, this has been Of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. A rhyming title that I am oh so extremely proud of. I have named nearly every single show that InfinityBrick.net puts out, with a couple of exceptions, Nesta Paragon included. This is the proudest I've ever been of a title.
You should be proud of that title because it is perfection in every way.
It implies, you know, Of Mice and Men, so it's got its literary strengths. It's also the book you have to read for ninth grade English, which is probably the level this show is going to operate at.
Oh, sure.
And it's stupid and it rhymes.
Yay!
This has been Of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. I am the Ben of that.
And I am Leslie.
You can find me at Ben C. Hamlin on Twitter, where I talk mostly about comics and science fiction. You can find Leslie over at...
You can find me over at Vanetti on Twitter.com, where I mostly talk about very above board things.
You can find Infinity Break over at InfinityBreak23 over on Twitter, where we post about all of our shows. And you can go to InfinityBreak.net to find our other shows. That is podcasts, webcomics, videos, and written blogs. Of course, if you would like to support this show, it's very easy. All you have to do is tell your friends and share it around the social medias. Gently bully your friends if you have to. You can also, of course, review our show on any of the listening platforms you are using, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, all that jazz. The more 5-star reviews we have, the easier it is for people to find us. If you'd like to support Infinity Break and all of our other shows, you can go to patreon.com/InfinityBreak. For as little as $1 a month, you get access to all sorts of behind-the-scenes audio, pre-sketches of comic book pages, and all sorts of wonderful stuff we're doing over there. We have a number of very modest goals set up that if you help us reach those, that means more and more Infinity Break shows in the future. Once again, I have been your host, Ben Hamlin. I've been joined, of course, by Leslie. Our logo, although it does not exist yet, will be done by Bethany Luthold. We will see you in 1 week's time for the second episode of BoJack Horseman. Leslie, do you want to take us out with the saxophone? Great, that's the show, folks. Thanks for listening. All right, and scene.
Thank you.
This podcast is part of Infinity Break, where we're telling stories our own way. You can find all of our shows, podcasts, webcomics, and more at infinitybreak.net. Stay up to date with new show announcements, behind-the-scenes sneak peeks, and updates on your favorite shows. You can follow us on any social media platform by searching for InfinityBreak23. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/InfinityBreak. Every dollar helps us improve the quality of this show and create new shows like it for your listening pleasure. Thank you for listening. Please tell your friends. And as always, stay in the loop.